I'm here with Alexander Mercurius, editor-in-chief of The Duran. Alexander, let's get into some of Putin's comments regarding World War II and some of the revisionist history, I would say, that has been taking place over the last few years to the last decades, maybe. I think you could safely say as to what happened in World War II, why did it happen, what were the alliances that were formed, and you know, this type of reframing of the historical narrative and the historical events of World War II, which of course have to do with Russia, back then the Soviet Union, which played a central role in the war and in defeating the German army, the Nazi army. And he said these comments, the really interesting, as you were telling me before we did the video, the real interesting comments that Putin made were during a defense board, defense ministry board meeting. He made similar comments with his thoughts on World War II and other similar meetings and events, but the real interesting, really the Putin's, you know, the meat of his thinking took place at this board meeting. So get into what he said or the history behind it and how Putin views things.
Yes, I mean, this is a most extraordinary meeting that took place at the Defense Ministry Board. But can I just explain to people the underlying background to this story? There has been a prolonged argument going on for several years now about the origins of the Second World War. The current Polish government, the current government in Poland, the Law and Justice Party government, has been arguing for some time that the war began as a result of an alliance, what was essentially an alliance between the Nazi Germany and the USSR. And it has been referring to the fact that there was this so-called non-aggression pact, which was signed in Moscow in August 1939 by the German foreign minister, Joachim von Ribbentrop, and the Soviet foreign minister, Vyacheslav Molotov. And these two men, in Stalin's presence, signed a non-aggression pact, which basically said that the USSR and Nazi Germany would not attack each other. And attached to that non-aggression pact, there was a secret protocol which said that there would be spheres of influence within Eastern Europe and Eastern Poland, the Baltic states, and the territory of what was then, the Kingdom of Romania. A territory within that kingdom, which was then called Bessarabia, but is now the independent Republic of Moldova, that those territories would be part of the Soviet sphere of influence. And then what happened subsequently in September 1939 was that the Nazis, the Germans attacked Poland. There was a war against Poland. Poland was defeated by the German army. The Polish government fled Warsaw, and in the middle of that war, towards the end of that war, the Soviet army also went into Poland and occupied Eastern Poland without, by the way, encountering much resistance. And then subsequently, later in 1939, the Soviet Union agreed defense agreements, as it called them, with the territory, the three Baltic republics. And then further in 1940, it also occupied and annexed this territory of Bessarabia, what is now the Republic of Moldova. And these three territories, Eastern Poland, the Baltic states, and Bessarabia, Moldova, then became integral territories of what became the USSR. And eventually, later in 1940, the Baltic states were actually formally annexed by the USSR.
You mean Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia?
Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia. Okay. Now, all of these territories gained independence from the USSR, from Russia, in 1991. Moldova is now an independent republic. The Eastern Poland is now the territory of Western Ukraine within the independent republic of Ukraine. Parts of it are also, by the way, parts of what is now the Independent Republic of Belarus. And of course, the three Baltic states are also independent, and they are members of NATO, and they're allies of Poland. I'm sorry to go into this rather complicated explanation of these annexations, but it's essential in order to understand what this whole argument is about. So what the Polish government, backed by the Baltic governments, is alleging is that this agreement that was made in August 1939 between the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany was a secret alliance. They were going to divide Eastern Europe between them, and that it was this alliance which led to the start of the Second World War. Now, this, if you like, orthodoxy, it is an orthodoxy within Poland, at least on the part of the Law and Justice Party, is now being adopted increasingly by large numbers of people in the West. It's becoming fairly popular, I've noticed, amongst a lot of people in the United States. You come across it occasionally in Britain. There's a man called Daniel Hannan, for example, who writes in the Daily Telegraph, who seems to have completely accepted it and absorbed it. And most controversially, for the Russians, the European Parliament recently passed a resolution equating Nazi Germany with the Soviet Union on the strength of this alliance. Now, the Russians, one of the great unifying issues within Russia is that the Soviet Union, which was, of course, the country of which today's Russian Federation was the core, was the key country that defeated Nazi Germany during the Second World War. I know this is difficult for many people in the West to accept or understand, but that is indisputable. Around 80% of the German army was defeated and destroyed on the Eastern Front in the Soviet Union. Tens of millions of Soviet citizens, 27 million, according to the last count, died during that war fighting to defeat Nazi Germany. If you watch the Victory Day celebrations in Moscow, which now take place every year on the 9th of May, one of the most moving things that you see are huge columns of ordinary Russian people with photographs and pictures of their fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers who fought during the Second World War. It is a massive issue for the Russians. And one of the things that they are saying, the Russians are saying, and this is a view which they have powerfully expressed, and which Vladimir Putin has also expressed, is that this agreement between Molotov and Ribbentrop that took place in Moscow in August 1939 has been completely misunderstood and misrepresented, that it was very far from being any sort of alliance between Nazi Germany and the USSR. That the point about it was that by the time this agreement was reached, Hitler had already resolved to attack Poland. That, by the way, is indisputable fact. So he had already made the decision to attack Poland.
Why is it indisputable fact?
It is indisputable fact because it has been established conclusively from the German archives. There was a series of meetings that took place in the first half of 1939 between Adolf Hitler and his various officials, including the military leadership, in which he made it absolutely clear that he had made an absolutely fixed decision that Germany would attack Poland on the 31st of August, 1939. And I think it is an essential point to always remember about Hitler, which is that whenever he decided to attack a country, he invariably did. There is not a single instance of Hitler making a decision of that nature and then changing it. It never happened, never, not at any point in the whole duration of his political career. Moreover, the German decision to attack Poland later that year was universally known in Europe, in the run-up to that attack. The British had already made it clear that if Germany did attack Poland, they would go to war against Germany. The British in March 1939 gave the Poles a guarantee that that was would happen. The French did the same thing. All of these things were, all of these discussions and negotiations, which took place in 1939, were part of a countdown to a war between Germany and Poland, and Germany and the Western powers, which absolutely everybody knew was coming. So, for people to say that it was this non-aggression pact between the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany that led to the Second World War, that caused the Second World War, is factually untrue. Now, that is the Russian view, but it is actually the one that is supported by the archives. There was already a German decision, a decision by Hitler to attack Poland in 1939. So the only issue in the run-up to the 1939 Molotov-Ribbentrop non-aggression pact was, what would the USSR's role in that war be? Now, the point Putin is making, and again, the point many Russians have been making over many years, in fact, ever since the 1930s, is that there was a concerted effort by the Soviet government, the government, we must always remember, led by Joseph Stalin in the 1930s, to create an anti-German alliance. The Soviets were always looking to forge an alliance with Britain and France to resist Germany. And the reason the Soviets did that was because, of course, Nazi German government was very, very anti-communist. And they were, of course, also fully aware that Germany, that Hitler had ambitions to obtain what he called living space at the expense of the Soviet Union. He was already thinking way back in the 20s and talking quite openly about the fact that he wanted Germany to expand into the territories of what was then the Soviet Union. So the Soviets were pushing always for an alliance with Britain and France. What happened was that alliance never at any time materialized. In November 1938, this is the year before the war began, the Soviets found themselves excluded from the Munich conference, which took place between Britain and France on the one side and Hitler and his allies in Munich on the other, in which the British and the French agreed to the partition of Czechoslovakia, which was one of the Soviet Union's allies in Europe at that time, and agreed to the German and Polish annexations, especially the German annexations of large areas of Czechoslovakia. Of course, the Soviets also, were aware that in March and April 1939, the British and the French recognized the government of Francisco Franco in Spain. This is the insurgent nationalist government in Spain that had was fighting a civil war against the Republican government of Spain, which was in control of Madrid, which was also allied to the Soviet Union. And they had always resisted, the British and the French had always resisted any form of alliance with the Soviet Union. Now, what happened over the course of 1939 in the run-up to the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact is that there were more negotiations between the British and the French and the Soviets to form such an alliance. All those negotiations failed. They went nowhere. There was no agreement reached. And Poland, which was, of course, by this point, allied to Britain and France, categorically refused to enter into any kind of alliance with the Soviet Union and made absolutely clear that it would never agree to Soviet troops entering Poland to fight Germany. So the situation by August 1939 was that there was already definitely going to be a war and definitely going to be a German attack on Poland. The attempt by the Soviets to form an alliance to resist Germany with Britain and France had failed. The British and the French had already shown to the Russians, the Soviets, bad faith at the time of the November 1938 Munich conference and over Spain. And so the Soviets decided that since they had no possibility of an alliance with the Western powers against the Germans, they would enter into a non-aggression pact with the Germans, which Hitler was offering, which would allow them to set out their spheres of influence in Eastern Europe and provide some kind of barrier that way to Germany's eastward expansion. So from the Soviet point of view and from today's Russian point of view, the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact was a defensive reaction to a situation in which the USSR had become very isolated in European diplomacy and was facing a situation where it had failed to forge an alliance with the Western powers and had the very real prospect of a hostile Germany defeating Poland and reaching its eastern borders. So that's the fundamental difference. The Poles see it as the setting the stage for the Second World War. The Russians see it as a defensive reaction brought about by the hostility of the two major Western powers, Britain and France, to themselves, and above all, to the extreme hostility in 1939 of Poland. This is an issue which simply won't go away. The Poles and the Russians argue about it all the time, and this resolution by the European Parliament has completely infuriated the Russians. It has made Putin extremely angry. It is an anger, by the way, which many Russians share, and that is what provoked his various comments.
I want you to get into a little bit more as to why Putin is making these statements.
Yeah,
I believe on 3-4 different occasions.
Yeah,
you've explained some of it right now. He's angry and the public is angry about these statements.
Yeah.
They've been ramping up over the past couple of years, but I want you to dig a little bit more into that. Mm. Are there any other reasons that this could be seen as a domestic issue for Putin as well, even though he doesn't need, you know, he's not going to be running, say, for a re-election, but is there a domestic play here as well? Is there a geopolitical play? But before you get there, so keep that in mind, before you get to that part, I want you to just stay a little bit more on the history. Eventually, the Russians entered into an alliance with the Western powers. So why did that happen, number one? And who initiated that? Was that because the U.S. entered the war and it was FDR who prompted the French and the English to get into that alliance eventually? And did the Soviet Union, did they enter the non-aggression pact with the Germans, not so much as a sphere of influence, carving up of Eastern Europe type of thing, but maybe more as a defensive reason to buy more time because they knew or they had a hunch that eventually the Germans would want to push east. Just if you can cover those topics before you get into a little more depth as to why we're hearing so many statements from Putin about this right now.
Yes.
Alexander.
Right, let's start with what the Soviet motive was for entering into the non-aggression pact. Again, I think a essential point to make here is that before 1939, the Soviets had made no territorial claims against Poland and had not said that they wanted to bring the Baltic states into the Soviet Union. They had not accepted the loss of the territory that is now Bessarabia, Moldova, to Romania, but in relation to Eastern Poland and the Baltic states, they had had no claims on them. From a Soviet point of view and a Russian point of view, I don't think any doubt at all, they didn't trust Hitler. I mean, nobody looking at European diplomacy in the 1930s had any reason by 1939 to trust Hitler. I mean, Hitler had systematically overturned treaties, and already by this point in his career, it was quite obvious that he was somebody who was intent on expanding German influence and German power. There's no question about this. Now, I mean, he'd occupied Austria. He annexed Austria. He'd, as I say, carved up. I mean, he reached this deal with the British and the French in November 1938 over Czechoslovakia. He annexed large territories of Czechoslovakia. And then in March 1939, he went back on it. Having already annexed large amounts of territory, he sent his army into Czechoslovakia and annexed what was left. And he absorbed what is now the Czech Republic into Germany. And he created out of Slovakia what became a satellite state. So no one trusted Hitler by this point. Certainly the Russians didn't. I think this is absolutely clear. And yes, I don't think there's any question at all about this. What is called, you know, spheres of influence. I mean, the word spheres of influence is used in the non-aggression pact. But the point is, or rather in the secret protocol. But the point was, from a Russian point of view, is that they were saying to the Germans, look, we understand you're going to attack Poland. Everybody knew by this point that Germany was going to attack Poland. But these are territories, Eastern Poland, Moldova, and the Baltic states, which are absolutely vital to our security. The German army mustn't go there. If it does go there, the non-aggression pact is over, and we will be in conflict with each other. And from a Russian point of view, a Soviet point of view, you can see why, because it keeps the German army, which, as I said, is hostile to Russia, the Russians see it as hostile to themselves, away from the core Russian territories. And that's, it's in my mind, a full and complete explanation of these annexations. They were taken as defensive steps. The Russians also annexed, by the way, after a war, some territories of what is now Finland. And that was again clearly done in order to protect the city of Leningrad, which is now St. Petersburg, Russia's second biggest city and its other capital. And the other thing we know is that after the non-aggression pact, as the war in the West took off, the Soviets massively ramped up defense spending. There was a very, very big increase in defense spending in the USSR. In the 18 months between the signing of the non-aggression pact, the 2 years between the signing of the non-aggression pact and the German attack on the Soviet Union in June 1941. So it is arguable. I mean, it seems to me there's no question about it. I mean, the Soviets did use the time that they got through the non-aggression pact to sort out their military position and to strengthen their eastern borders. And by the way, and this is something people always forget, in August 1939, when all this was going on, when, you know, Molotov was meeting with Ribbentrop, the Soviet Union was already fighting a war in the Far East against Japan. There was a war going on between the Soviet military, the Soviet army, and the Japanese army in Mongolia. And it led in a massive battle in which about 20,000 people were killed at a place called Halkin Gol, which ended that war with an agreement which basically secured, the Soviets, I should say, won that battle. And the Soviets that way were able to secure their border areas in the east and sign a peace agreement with Japan, which had up to that point been an ally of Nazi Germany, and therefore didn't face the danger of a war on two fronts, with Germany in the West and Japan in the East. So the non-aggression pact made a great deal of sense for them. At the same time, I mean, one has to understand that from a Polish point of view, having, you know, the Soviet army moving into Eastern Poland at the time when Poland was in a life and death struggle with Nazi Germany felt like a terrible betrayal. And one understands the bitter and strong feelings that many Poles still have about this. But given the kind of situation which existed in Europe in 1939, one cannot say that the non-aggression pact between Molotov and Ribbentrop, between the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany, didn't make a great deal of diplomatic sense from a Soviet point of view, given the reality that war was bound to come and given the danger Nazi Germany represented to the Soviet Union. Now, how did it all work out later? Well, the answer is that, of course, Hitler won his war in the West. He defeated France. He drove the British out of Europe. He occupied all of Western Europe. And then, in the way that he always did, he attacked the Soviet Union on the 22nd of June, 1941. And he did so because he had this overarching program to obtain living space at the expense of the Soviet Union. Now, I know that there is a continuous other revisionist view, which is that he attacked the Soviet Union to preempt a Soviet attack on him, which again I find very bizarre, because I mean, you know, it's the same people who say that the Soviets were allied with the Nazis, who basically say that, you know, Hitler's attack was a preemptive one. Again, we now know, we've been through the Soviet archives and indeed the German archives in great detail. There is no evidence to support this claim. It all originates with a story by a Soviet defector in the 1970s from the Soviet intelligence agency, the GRU. And we've now established, I think, pretty conclusively, in fact, unequivocally, that no plan by the Soviet Union to attack Nazi Germany in 1941 existed. Anyway, Soviets find themselves attacked by Hitler. Hitler is still at war with Britain. Britain and the United States are already edging towards an alliance with each other. The Americans at this point are not directly involved in the war, but they are already supplying military materials to Britain under the arrangement known as Lend-Lease. So the British are at war with Hitler. There's been a complete change of government in Britain with the new Prime Minister, Winston Churchill, who is committed to defeating the Germans and is fully prepared to forge an alliance with the Soviets in order to achieve it. So after the German attack on the Soviet Union, Churchill goes to Moscow. There is a formal alliance agreement reached. There's a formal treaty of alliance between Britain and the Soviet Union reached to defeat Germany. And then in December 1941, Japan, Germany's ally, attacks the United States. And Hitler declares war on the United States. So that is the formation of the two alliances. You have a situation where, in effect, Hitler is declaring war on all sorts of people. And he rounds it all out in December 1941 by openly declaring war on the United States. So that means that Britain and the United States now also form their alliance. Britain is an alliance with the Soviet Union. And you have the Great Alliance, the Grand Alliance of the Second World War, of Britain, the United States, and the Soviet Union fighting Germany, Italy, and Japan. And that is how the Second World War plays out. And I think, if I can just finish on this, I think most people who followed the Second World War closely agree that it was the Soviet army which overwhelmingly defeated the German army in Europe. And of course, it was the American fleet which defeated Japan in the East. So it was those two powers, the Soviet Union and Japan, the United States, that ultimately won the two wars. But by far the bloodier one, and by far the more difficult one, was the one that the Soviet Union fought in Europe between 1941 and 1945, and which ended in the total defeat of Germany. So I think that's the history. I mean, you know, one can just debate the history endlessly and at great length, but that, it seems to me, is the history. Now, turning to the subject of why this has been so, you know, has provoked such a strong reaction in Russia now. The first thing to say is it would provoke a strong reaction at any time. Russians care about the Second World War. It is for them the single greatest and in some ways the most painful experience of their recent history. I mean, it ended in triumph for their country, but at tremendous cost in lives. And every Russian family is related to someone who died in the Second World War. So for the Russians to be told that this war, which ended in victory for their country at such huge, at the cost of such a huge struggle and at such an enormous cost in lives, was somehow brought about by themselves, is always going to provoke immense anger. It also, I think, reinforces their anger when they are told that they went into Eastern Europe not as liberators from Nazi oppression, but as oppressors themselves. I mean, the Russians get extremely sensitive to any suggestion that the communist governments that they established in Eastern Europe bear any resemblance to the genocidal regime that Nazi Germany had in these territories. So this is always going to be a sensitive issue. Putin, whose father fought and was very badly wounded in the Second World War, in this shares the feelings of most Russians. But even if he didn't, even if he was the cold, icy calculator that people think he is, he would have to respond to resolutions of this kind because Russian public opinion is outraged about them. Again, it always amazes me that people in the West never understand that Russia does have a public opinion. And for the Russians, these historical issues do matter. Russians are extremely interested in their own history. They know it very well. They have strong opinions about it. And they would react very, very negatively if their government did not respond as strongly as Putin has done to an issue, to statements of this kind. Last but not least, next year is the 75th anniversary of the Soviet victory, of the Allied victory in the Second World War. So for that reason, also, the Russians feel particularly strongly about this at this particular time. But I must also say that there is also, I think, within Russia, a feeling as they see the spread of this revisionist history in the West, of course, especially in Poland, but also elsewhere, that it is an expression the West's underlying hostility to their country, that it shows to the Russians that the West has never appreciated, not only does not appreciate the Soviet sacrifice in the Second World War and the Soviet role in the Second World War, but viscerally is so hostile to Russia that it will look for reasons always to blame Russia for everything. And that is making the Russians feel that the West is conditioned to be fundamentally and invariably hostile to themselves. This is, again, something that I don't think many Westerners understand. But from a Russian point of view, this sort of revisionist history, there is a continuum between it and Hitler's attack on the Soviet Union in 1941 and the Western failure before that to agree an alliance with the Soviet Union, with Russia, in other words, against Nazi Germany in the 1930s. So the Russians see in all of this proof that the West has it in for them and always has.
All right. Alexander McCurse, Editor-in-Chief of the Durand, thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Click on that notifications bell to make sure you get notifications when we publish a new video. And check us out on iTunes and SoundCloud for an audio copy of this video. Go to Patreon, PayPal, and subscribe Star, and please donate to the Durand. Your donation really helps us out a lot. And also look for this video on BitChute and on DurandVideo.com, where we post all our videos on those two platforms. And download the Telegram app, iTunes, and Android Play Store, so you can keep up to date with everything that's happening at the Durand community. And you will also be able to get the DRN20 discount, which is still running and is going to run even after the new year for a while. And that gives you 20% off all our merchandise at thedurandshop.com.
Absolutely. And what amazing merchandise it is. We've discussed many times our magic mugs since we've been talking about Russian matters. I've got my magic mug with the coat of arms of the Russian Federation, which is the coat of arms that you will find on Putin's own mugs. I mean, he made quite an impression, by the way, when he brought one of his mugs with this specific coat of arms with him to the G20 summit some months ago. The only thing I will say is our mugs are, I am sure, better than his, because they are made of far better porcelain than I'm sure his mugs are. I mean, this is, as frankly, as good a mug as you're ever going to get. It's 15 ounces, it's beautifully made, it's incredibly strong, it's light, it balances well. I've had my mugs, I've got many Durand mugs. I've had my mugs for almost a year now. They're all in perfect condition. There's no discoloration, no chipping, no cracking, nothing like that. And they all work perfectly with coffee, hot chocolate, tea, beer, champagne, whatever you like. One thing, by the way, I'm not going to drink my mugs from is this bottle of gin, which I obtained whilst out shopping. I was doing my Christmas shopping in Fortnum and Mason's, and I came across there a gentleman, Ian Puddick, who has launched this extraordinary, amazing gin, which I should say is now, you can see here, it says supplied to Buckingham Palace. And by the way, it also turns out the Foreign Commonwealth Office and Lancaster House, which is where we receive foreign leaders in Britain, and the Department of International Trade and the Victoria and Albert Museum and all sorts of other glittering places. So I've been enjoying this gin over Christmas. It was under my Christmas tree, and it is an amazing gin. And you see, you get all these amazing gins if you buy things and follow the Durand, because that was how I got to know Mr. Puddick. I met him at Fortnum and Mason's, and he recognized me because it turns out that he follows the Durand and has bought mugs like this. So I've got possibly, in fact, I'm not going to say possibly, definitely England's best gin. No question about it. It's an amazing, light, wonderful gin, really exactly how gin should be. And he has got our magic mugs, and apparently he's now wanting to send me some of his rum also. Can I say, the reason I don't drink gin from mugs is that I think with gin, definitely it's a cocktail, you need a clear glass, but you can pretty much drink anything else, frankly, from our magic mugs. And it isn't just magic mugs we've got amazing shirts, 100% cotton shirts, like the one I'm wearing now. This is a short sleeve t-shirt. I'm about to leave for the Alps, so I'm taking my long sleeve shirts with me. I'm also packed away all my beautiful, amazing polo shirts, because they will be such a tremendously wonderful thing to wear at the sort of apres ski and all that. So amazing mugs, amazing shirts, possibility of making wonderful friends. Who knows, might even, you know, be able to meet and exchange stories about gins and mugs, as I've just done. What are you waiting for? There's still time for buying things, not just for Christmas, but for the new year. As Alex says, DRN20 is the discount code. You don't just get mugs and shirts. You can also get hoodies, stickers, hats, all sorts of amazing things. We've also got two new e-books out there, one on Ukrainegate, one on the Epstein scandal. So all of these things are there still. You can buy them for yourselves. You can buy them for your friends. You can buy them for your family. DRN20. Alex will tell you how to go there and buy them.
Just go to thedurantshop.com and put DRN20 on the checkout page, the last page in the coupon box. Alexander Mercuris, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.